Hi, I'm Elisa Lamel, Legal Content Specialist at Krauss Financial Services. Joining me today is Travis Smith, an elder law attorney at Holmes, Holmes & Neeson in Oklahoma City. Prior to joining private practice, Travis was the Assistant General Counsel at the Oklahoma Department of Human Services, where he represented the agency in welfare benefit programs. He has litigated Medicaid issues in both Oklahoma District and Appellate Courts, the Western District of Oklahoma, the 10th Circuit, and the United States Supreme Court. Today, Travis will be sharing his insight with us on what to do if your client's Medicaid application is denied, how to navigate the fair hearing process, and tips you can use to help ensure your success. Hi, Travis. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Sure.
All right. So today we're going to be discussing navigating the fair hearing process, what that process looks like, what attorneys should know about when they receive that Medicaid denial, and then some tips for their success in the actual fair hearing. So you actually have a unique perspective on this because in your time as an elder law attorney, a portion of that was actually spent as a former litigator for Oklahoma Department of Human Services. Right. So,
and before that, I worked for legal aid and represented clients before at fair hearings.
Yes. So you have a very extensive background in handling fair hearings. So tell me about how your experience in that role, specifically coming from Oklahoma DHS prior to joining private practice, how that shaped your understanding of Medicaid and working within the department.
Well, it first of all, because I was litigating, it made me learn Medicaid very well. But working within the department helped me understand now why what happens before denial happens. And since I wrote the rules on how to conduct fair hearings, I'm pretty much know how fair hearings go. Also, once in a while, I'd represent the department at a fair hearing. So I know why the workers do what they do. I know their foibles, and I know why the ALJ does what they do. And I'm very familiar with all aspects of inside DHS and then outside.
Okay, perfect. So the first question I kind of want to dive into here is the denial process. So how common is it for a Medicaid application to be denied? And what is the common reasons for it to be issued as a denial?
Well, the most common reason for denial is failure to provide all the information needed to approve the application. This happens more with people doing it on their own than applications where lawyers are involved. The reason that applications with lawyers get denied most commonly has to do with unusual circumstances regarding the how you hold property. If you're a joint tenant in property with eight other people, how is that, you know, realistically, that's not available to you. We used to have the annuity issue, which we no longer have since the 10th Circuit told me I was wrong about annuities. We have denials based on private promissory notes, where the department is fighting tooth and toenail about different promissory note schemes. But occasionally, with a lawyer, they'll get denied for not providing all the information needed to approve. Although the workers are pretty good about working with lawyers to say, here's what we still need. Please provide it.
Perfect. So tell me what attorneys should do when they receive that denial. It sounds like it can be for a variety of reasons. So what should they do when they get that notice of denial?
Well, the first thing they should do is file a request for fair hearing. And you might be able to cure the denial later, but you want to get that fair hearing request in and not wait till the last minute, in my opinion. The second thing you should do is, if you're not sure why the denial was issued, to contact the worker and say, what's up? And you might be able to cure that way. And then next, if it's something you know the worker doesn't have the authority to resolve, is to contact one of the two lawyers that represents the agency in Medicaid cases to see if you can straighten it out with them.
Okay, so what is supposed to be included on the actual notice of denial?
Well, at least in Oklahoma, the notices are constitutionally defective. They don't provide due process. According to case law and federal regulations, the notice is supposed to say what the agency did, why they did it, and a cite to the regulations that support the decision. The Oklahoma notices typically say something like, you're not eligible for services because you don't meet eligibility requirements. That's facially defective. So a lot of times you'll actually know why you're denied. And I think whenever, if you know why you're denied, along with your request for fair hearing, submit a short letter brief as to why the decision is incorrect. If you don't know why the decision was made, then obviously you're not going to submit a letter brief.
So what should attorneys do if they don't have that reasoning on there and they're not sure themselves?
Well, try the worker. And if the worker won't tell you or can't tell you, because sometimes the worker's gotten instructions from the chain of command above them and don't really understand what the problem is. Once in a while, you'll get a worker that just says, I've been working with you and you know what it, why, and that's all I'm going to say. That's rare. So if you really don't understand and can't get help from the worker, then you contact one of the Medicaid lawyers and they'll find out and get back to you. Now, before the hearing, at least 10 days before the hearing, the agency has to give you what they call a hearing summary. That's where you find out what the real deal is on the denial. It will have explain the reason, give the facts, it'll have the rules attached, and that tells you what you need to know, what the agency's position is. Unfortunately, for pro se people, you don't know you need to appeal. You don't know what to appeal. And so often people don't appeal thinking, well, I just don't qualify. And then they reapply, you know, and then they've lost the 90-day retroactive cert date.
So tell me what attorneys should do when they appeal and they go to a fair hearing and they have it scheduled. How should they prepare for that first hearing and what can they expect?
Well, like any other hearing, you want to be the person in the room who knows the most about the case. And if you've done your homework, you'll know more about the case than the worker. And if there is a DHS lawyer present at the hearing, which there isn't always, you'll know more about it than them, because they don't have a lot of time to devote to preparation. Want to be prepared to give a short opening statement if the ALJ, at the beginning of the hearing, the ALJ will say, my understanding is we're here because X. And if that doesn't correspond to what you thought the hearing was about, you should say so right then. If the ALJ just starts the hearing, you should give a short opening that says, my understanding is the case is about this, and here's our position. In Oklahoma, at least, the department presents their evidence first, even though the burden of proof is on the applicant to show that they're eligible. It makes more sense for the department to go first to explain the department's version of what happened and why and what the rules are, so you can then present your side of the case to rebut that. There's cross-examination allowed. Normally, I don't cross-examine a lot. If you haven't given an opening at the beginning, don't give an opening when it's your turn to present evidence. The ALJ already knows what the case is about and what your position is. Prepare your witnesses just like you would for any other case. I always encourage witnesses to try not to use pronouns. The judge doesn't know all the facts, you know, so refer to the worker as either by their name or by the worker. I think it sounds better to go say, you know, Jane Smith rather than the worker, because Jane Smith is in the hearing. Don't cover stuff that the judge doesn't have to know to decide in your favor. You know, these are techniques that lawyers know what to do. If you presented cases in court to a judge, you pretty much know how to present it at an administrative hearing. But the techniques that you might use to persuade a jury that are different than what you would use to persuade a judge aren't helpful.
So what are some of the witnesses that a client might call
The client, quite often. Sometimes like in Oklahoma, you might need a petroleum landman to testify about mineral interests. You might need a CPA on occasion. I know in some hearings, a banker will testify about a promissory note. Usually the client is going to be your main witness, or the client's daughter or relative that's handling your main point of contact with the family. Usually the client themselves, if they're in a nursing home, isn't real helpful as far as providing information. You know, a lot of them just don't have access to documents. If they've declined, can't answer your questions.
So I understand that the fair hearing ends and there's no decision reached at that time. You'll receive one later in the mail. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
I'm an advocate of then asking for time to submit a letter brief outlining your case. You know, give the facts favorable to your side, connect those with the rules. And it's your chance to make it, it's your only chance to make a record. In Oklahoma, at least, the step after the hearing decision is review by the agency head, who doesn't take new evidence. Your step after that is appeal to state district court, where the court's prohibited from taking new evidence. It's strictly a review on the record. So any facts or theories of the case that you want to present, you need to present at the hearing level to preserve them.
So what happens while the client, they're a nursing home resident, what happens while they're waiting for that fair hearing decision? Do they still have to pay the full nursing home bill?
Well, it depends on the nursing home. A lot of nursing homes, what I'm familiar with is a lot of nursing homes, if you pay what would be your Medicaid copay each month, they're happy to wait. Some nursing homes aren't. And the client doesn't have the money. So either the community spouse or the family has to pay.
So is there ever an opportunity for once they receive benefits, are they retroactively applied then if they are approved after the hearing?
You can get, yeah, yeah. You can get benefits back, if you're eligible, back to the first day of the third month preceding the application. And if you've private paid the whole bill when Medicaid pays, then the nursing home has to refund what you've paid in excess of what you owed.
Okay. So sounds like you've gone through a number of fair hearings and you've actually had some of your cases escalated higher than just the administrative level. What are some key takeaways or some words of wisdom that you would have for attorneys who are navigating this for the first time?
Well, the U.S. Supreme Court said that the Medicaid Act is a morass. So, and difficult to understand. So if you're going to court, if it's at the state level, you should assume the judge doesn't know anything. And you're going to have to, in your brief, you're going to have to educate them to what Medicaid is, what the law is, how federal law may be different than your state rules, if that's your problem. For federal court, if you're able to bring your case under 1983 for deprivation of a federal right, you have to assume that the judge doesn't know anything about Medicaid and neither does the clerk. So you, unless it's a judge you know has heard a few Medicaid cases at least, you need to educate them again.
So for any of our attorneys who might be watching and they want to reach out to you with questions about what should they do, what should they argue when they received a denial or they're entering a fair hearing, what's the best way they can connect with you?
Well, email. It's travis@hnlaw.com. That's harrynancylaw.com. And I'm happy to respond. I think the Medicaid bar, we're all in this together, and we should help each other when possible.
Perfect. Well, we're going to be sure to link your contact information at the end of our interview for viewers to access.
Okay.
Thank you enough for your time, Travis.
You're welcome. I'm thrilled to be asked to participate.